Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we talk about on this podcast. I share ideas and strategies and blueprints. I tell stories about things that worked, but also some of my big epic fails, because ultimately I believe teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And one of the ways that teachers help students is through giving meaningful feedback. And so that's what we're going to talk about today, this idea of the power of student conferencing. I'm going to share four different models. So the main idea is this: if we want to empower students to own the assessment process, something that I've talked about a lot on this podcast, we need to incorporate meaningful self-assessment and peer assessment into our lessons. However, students still need guidance from their teachers. This is why I love 5-minute conferences. Unlike a deep dive tutoring session or a longer conversation, these short 5-minute sessions provide a quick opportunity to guide reflection, provide feedback, discuss the mastery of standards, or simply do a pulse check. And so I want to share some strategies for implementing this 5-minute system. As mentioned before, I'm a professor, and when I teach our lesson planning and assessment courses, I always make it a goal to have 2 5-minute conferences with each student over a period of 6 classes. Note that this is easier when the classes are in person, but it can still work via Zoom. You just have to get a little bit creative about that process. Now, while these 10 minutes total of one-on-one conferencing might not seem like a big deal, it's often the very thing that students mention in course evaluations. In other words, it matters to my students. But I actually began this conferencing process about 15 or 16 years ago, and it's one of my favorite ways to engage students in meaningful feedback. During these conferences, students are empowered to ask questions about their work and reflect on both the process and the product. They're able to navigate how they are doing and what they need to do to improve. And along the way, they end up improving in their metacognition. My goal is that students know what they know, what they don't know, what they need to know, what the next steps they need to take, and where they can go for help, including how I might be able to help them. And when teachers use these short conferences, assessment moves from a teacher-directed monologue into this back-and-forth dialogue. As this occurs, teachers get the chance to get to know students on a more personal level. This allows for a better approach to differentiated instruction. It can help increase engagement. Research has demonstrated over and over again for about 20 years now that the teacher-student relationship plays a vital role in student engagement, participation, and effort. Students feel known on a deeper level, which increases trust. This in turn leads to a higher sense of student self-efficacy, right? The belief that they can accomplish certain tasks. But it can also help prevent discipline issues, which coming out of COVID has been a very real issue for a lot of K-12 educators. But honestly, it's more than that. In my own experience as a middle school teacher, it was a chance to get to know some of the quieter students. I experienced this firsthand. Before doing one-on-one conferencing, I accidentally ignored some of the quiet kids who were doing, well, just fine in my class. The 5-minute conferences helped guarantee that I met with each student every week one-on-one and that I engaged, even for a short amount of time. It was a safety net for a student who might slip through the cracks because they were, well, kind of quiet. Meanwhile, it also saved me time. Every conference was essentially a chance to engage in ongoing formative assessment. As a result, I spent less time grading, especially giving student feedback on their work. Meanwhile, it allowed me to thrive as an introverted teacher myself. I need this one-on-one time with students because the large crowd of a whole class can feel exhausting at times. And as an introvert, I could sort of recharge while meeting one-on-one with students. So with that in mind, I want to share with you four different kinds of conferences. The first type of conference is the advice conference. This conference is all about learning specific skills that students are missing. Each student must come to the conference with a series of questions where they will ask for specific help. This is a chance for that targeted one-on-one attention and explicit help with a strategy. Students guide the process, tapping into students, So with this in mind, I want to share four different kinds of conferences that you might have. The first one is the advice conference. This conference is all about learning specific skills that students are missing. Each student must ask the teacher a series of questions based upon an area where they are struggling. This is a chance for targeted one-on-one feedback. It's a chance to get explicit help with a specific strategy. It's a chance to get one-on-one attention that's different than just pulling small groups. Students guide the process, and they tap into the teacher's expertise. This has the added bonus of encouraging students to embrace the idea that mistakes are a part of the learning process, and it sets up a classroom culture where every student is humble enough to admit that they might be struggling, and that's okay. It's part of the growing process. The second type of conference is the reflection conference. Instead of telling students what to do, the goal is to draw out student reflection. The teacher uses a series of reflective questions to lead the students in this process of metacognition, and it guides them toward setting and monitoring their goals. As the year progresses, the teacher asks fewer follow-up questions, and the students begin to share more and more how they're doing without the aid of these pre-chosen questions, and instead kind of sharing how they're doing with a more organic process of follow-up questions. So it gets, I guess I would say, a little more informal and a little less structured as the year progresses. And that's actually kind of a beautiful thing about that process. The third idea is the mastery conference. Unlike the reflection conference or the advice conference, it's not about getting specific help, and it's not about broad reflection. The focus here is about reflecting on specific mastery of the content. In other words, we use this standard-based learning grid as a part of our process, and it's a way to assess, did I master the learning? This is what the goal is. This is what the learning target is. This is what the standard is. However you may phrase that, whatever you may use for it, this is the criteria. Now, let's look at, are you where you should be? In some cases, it's connected to a goal. And again, that might have been set during the reflection conference, but now you're really looking at, am I mastering the content? And then the final one is the pulse check. This is an informal conference in which the teacher simply checks in to see how the student is doing. This is the most open-ended, and it doesn't really require a particular protocol. So notice that in this podcast, if you look at the show notes, you can find the blog post, and you can download a set of handouts that you can use for this, for the advice, reflection, and mastery conference. There's a protocol, a phase one, phase two, phase three, things like that. With a pulse check, it's much more informal. You just say, how you doing? What's going on? Tell me how school's going for you. How are you doing working in your group right now? You might sometimes give students something like a survey to do and use that survey to guide the process. Often teachers will tie it to SEL components like empathy, awareness, communication. You might do a pulse check on, for example, how well are students doing at taking creative risks? And they do a quick survey. You pull the survey results and you say, hey, I noticed this is what you said on your survey. How are you really doing with this? What's getting in the way of you taking some risk? What are you thinking? What's going on? And it really is much more, I would say, informal and relational compared to something like the feedback conference, which tends to be much more focused on academic mastery of specific skills, right? Or the mastery conference where you're tying it to, you know, specific course goals or standards, you know, or criterion. So the goal is with these four different types of conferences, you can use which conferences work best for you. And you might rotate it where you do, you know, feedback conference 1 week, and then the next week you do reflection, then mastery, then pulse check, and you run it on a sort of a rotation process. You might have students choose which kind of conference they want. And so they say, I want a feedback conference. I want to do a reflection conference. I would want to go for a pulse check right now. That's really what I want to talk about. And they choose the type of conference. It's really up to you in terms of, you know, how you choose to organize this. So you might have a few questions about how these actually work. Do you meet with every student? And I would say yes. Try to meet with every single one. When I taught social studies, which was departmentalized, that's when you're teaching one subject for, you know, 45 minutes to 90 minutes, depending on the day. When I did that, I had the goal of meeting with each student every other week. That's the best I could do. When I taught self-contained, so all subjects, I met with every student every week. That was important to me. And I would often schedule 1 to 3 conferences per day with students who needed additional support. So some students might meet up with me twice or even 3 times a week, but the goal was every student would get a chance to meet with me every single week. Ultimately, you know your students the best. So you need to devise a system that works best for you, right? When do you run these conferences? Find the best moments where kids can be talking to each other while working independently, right? You don't want to have the whole class working silently and suddenly they're eavesdropping on the conversation that you're having with a student one-on-one. You want the class to be working at a buzzing, not too loud noise level so that you can hear the student talking, but there's a general hum that allows, you know, the student to feel like it's still private. The one-on-one conversation. It might be during a warm-up, during independent practice, during extended project times. You might excuse a student from the exit slip at the end of a class period and do a quick pulse check meeting, for example. And really, as you start running conferences, you'll begin to notice that these little moments pop up all the time where you say, actually, I do have 5 minutes right now to go do XYZ. Let's run this type of conference, or let's do that kind of conference. And you begin to find those moments where you can prioritize it. And again, it might seem like a little bit of extra work, but it's actually saving you time. How do you find time to do this? Again, I want to say, if you meet with each student each week, you'll need to figure out how many times you can do this. So when I taught in a 75-minute block, I was able to devote 25 minutes to, you know, meeting with students. And so I did, you know, 5 student conferences per class period. And that was a lot. That was 25 minutes out of a 75-minute class period. But I still had 50 minutes to do, you know, direct instruction, workshops, small groups, all that kind of stuff. And that allowed me in a class of 25 to meet with every student every single week. For the most part, though, when I did that, I actually found that it worked best to meet with 5 students a day, and I would generally run a rotation of about 3 students who would be meeting with me, you know, on this rotation of every other week, and then I would have other students that I was meeting with every single week because they just needed a little bit of additional time. So again, you're allowing it to be equitable, so every student gets an opportunity to have these conferences, but some students are going to need a little bit more. Again, figure out what works for you. For other classes, you might realize I can only do 3 student conferences per class period per day. That's okay. With 30 students, I can meet with every single student, you know, every other week. Again, figure out what works for you. It helps to give students specific days when they know it's going to be their conference time. So they'll know, for example, I'm on Mondays, I'm on Tuesdays. Put a schedule with student names on the wall, or put it inside of your LMS. Whatever you want in terms of how you organize that, it's going to work best for you. I have seen teachers who do a much better job than I did, who, you know, they put it up on an anchor chart. They have one person who sort of runs the conferences and calls names and double checks, and then all they have to do is just be there for the conferences. I was never like that. I just would put kids' names on the board and I would say, you know, conferences today, and I would list the kids' names, and then I would often just have to call students over and be like, hey, you're next. And that was my system. It wasn't ideal. Again, there's a much more organized way to do it. Making sure that each kid kind of has the day of the week for them might be the best system for you. Now, what about the location? Every teacher is different. Some love to pull students over to one of those like kidney-shaped tables and they can look at each other while they talk. Sometimes teachers might want to sit down at a student desk next to the student's seat, and it sort of becomes this equal playing field where they're both sitting at the same eye level. Some of the younger teachers I've seen in terms of working with younger students will bring them forward at the carpet time area, and they'll sit on a rug together, and they'll be sitting sort of crisscross applesauce style. I found that for me, I loved having data up. I loved having examples up. So I had a laptop that was up on a kind of standing center, and we would, you know, I would stand up next to the laptop. Students would stand next to me next to the laptop, and I could point to the computer. They could point to the computer. And we weren't really giving a lot of, like, eye contact. We were both looking at the computer, but we were in close proximity, and we could look at each other when we needed to. And I found that for middle schoolers, did better than the sort of direct eye contact that can sometimes become, like, unnerving to kids. It really is your comfort level. I cannot stress this enough. Make this process your own. What do you prepare ahead of time? What I have found is that just letting students know ahead of time that they will need to be doing the conferences, preparing them for what it looks like. Sometimes modeling the process with kids at the first week of school can be helpful. It's really important that they know that this is not disciplinary. It is not graded. It is not punitive. This is all about helping students grow, and everyone will be a part of this. I found that preparing ahead of time, giving students a reflection sheet, giving them a guide sheet. I kind of think about the 5-minute conference system handouts that you can download as sort of a blueprint that they can use to guide them in the process. It's a bit of an outline. In the end, though, it really does come down to what works best for you, where your students are in terms of their own, you know, development and maturity, and then, you know, test different things out and figure out for you what works best. Hey there, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I know that there are leaf blowers going on all around me. I feel like today must just be like the leaf blowing day. So you get that beautiful fall ambiance of the nonstop leaf blowers. I kept waiting to record it, and finally I was like, it's just all around. It's not going to stop. So I do hope you can hear me well over the leaf blowers through this whole podcast, and I hope you got something of value from it. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you consider telling a friend about it and then also leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever it is that you get your podcast? That would mean the world to me. Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day, and go out and make something awesome.